Private First Class Lindy England faces more hearings tomorrow on her role in the Abu Ghraib prison abuse scandal. She's one of seven reservists charged with mistreating Iraqi prisoners. Administration officials have portrayed England and the others as out-of-line renegades. But two Pentagon reports this past week suggest that blame for the abuse goes higher than the White House has previously acknowledged. NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
The investigation led by three Army generals into the military intelligence unit at Abu Ghraib showed that 42 soldiers, medics, and civilian contractors either encouraged, condoned, or participated in physical and sexual abuse of detainees. Also implicated, five officers of the 205th Military Intelligence Brigade. Lieutenant General Anthony Jones said fault extends only indirectly to more senior commanders.
The leadership above the 205th MI Brigade were not directly responsible for the violent abuses that happened as we've depicted. However, I will tell you they bear responsibility for those things that happen in the units and the soldiers underneath them happen.
Indeed, the reports say that responsibility extends at least up to Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, the former ground commander in Iraq. Classified sections of that Army report, first published by the New York Times, show that Sanchez signed off on interrogation techniques that exceeded Army guidelines and international law.
General Sanchez, he approved methods that violate the Geneva Conventions, and the people under him then used those methods.
Reed Brody is special counsel at Human Rights Watch and the author of The Road to Abu Ghraib.
You are not allowed to put an unmuzzled guard dog on a prisoner. You are not allowed to hold people nude and to humiliate them. Once interrogation tactics, whose very purpose was the humiliation and the infliction of pain on detainees, was approved as legitimate, it's perhaps not surprising that untrained soldiers on the ground would think that even more extreme forces of abuse were permissible and perhaps even encouraged.
Last year, as the insurgency in Iraq grew in strength, General Sanchez in mid-September issued a memo broadening interrogation guidelines. That policy was rejected by his bosses at U.S. Central Command. But on October 12th, a policy memo by Sanchez's staff included some broadened interrogation leeway that the report says created serious misunderstandings about just what techniques were approved. Dan Garay, a military analyst with the Lexington Institute, says it was those conflicting policy signals by Sanchez that helped foster confusion.
It's almost directly said that Sanchez added to the confusion and, in fact, in some ways encouraged behavior that at best can be said to be borderline. And then having encouraged that behavior, having rescinded that behavior, without being clear about where the new borderlines were, where the new lines were, contributed to sort of a bit of chaos in the system.
Others believe responsibility goes even higher. Senior administration officials made decisions on treatment of al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees, whom the White House deemed enemy combatants not subject to the Geneva Conventions. Both reports show that parts of those high-level policy decisions drifted into Iraq, where prisoners were covered by the Geneva Codes. Again, Reed Brody of Human Rights Watch.
It wasn't the colonels who set aside the Geneva Conventions, who approved the use of guard dogs, holding detainees in stress positions, things that Donald Rumsfeld approved for Guantanamo, then migrated to Afghanistan, to Iraq, and into those famous pictures from Abu Ghraib, where we see those very tactics.
While both reports are critical of General Sanchez and his staff, both also take pains to show that ground commanders were under intense pressure to get better intelligence on a growing deadly anti-American movement. General Kern told reporters that General Sanchez thought he was going to be heading a security and stability mission in Iraq, only to have to lead the fight against a raging insurgency whose guerrilla tactics were constantly changing.
He was faced with having to develop intelligence so that he could determine why the attacks were occurring, where they were going to occur next, and what he could do about it. He put a lot of pressure on his people to get that intelligence so that he could take appropriate actions.
But many analysts agree that the more aggressive interrogation methods at Abu Ghraib failed to produce key insights into the insurgency. Today, U.S. commanders still have only a limited understanding in the Sunni parts of Iraq just how insurgents are organized, supplied, and funded, and just who the fighters are. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Washington.
Now, this clarification on a story from last night. We called convicted spy Jonathan Pollard a naval intelligence officer. In fact, Pollard worked for the U.S. Navy as a civilian intelligence analyst.